Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm G. Abby Lee reporting. Leftist rebels in Colombia say they have released two Dutch journalists kidnapped earlier this week. The two were turned over to a delegation of Colombian human rights officials. A tweet from Colombia's Marxist ELN rebel group said the men have been released in perfect conditions. ELN, Colombia's second largest rebel group, is in talks with the government to put an end to 5 decades of war. At least 6 people have been found dead, more than 120 remain missing, and 62 homes are covered Saturday after a huge landslide buried the mountain village of Xinmo in China's Sichuan province. A local government statement said an emergency response to the first-class catastrophic geological disaster is underway. More than 2,000 people, police, soldiers, and civilians are participating in the rescue efforts. Rescuers use ropes to move a boulder while dozens of others, aided by dogs to sniff out humans, search the rubble for survivors. This man's home was one of those that was flattened. As we hear through an interpreter, he was injured while trying to dodge the landslide.
All of a sudden, the land started sliding toward us. We couldn't get out of its way. I was one of the lucky ones. So many around me were buried.
A North Korean Taekwondo demonstration team visiting South Korea could present a way forward to reduce tensions by using sports to reestablish a channel of dialogue and cooperation. South Korean President Moon Jae-in was on hand for the opening of the World Taekwondo Championship being held in Muju, South Korea, where he welcomed this first inter-Korean Taekwondo exchange in a decade. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump told Fox News, "This is very bothersome that Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who is probing possible ties between the Trump campaign and Russia, is friends with the former FBI Director James Comey, whom he fired." Mr. Trump also disputed Comey's claim that he had asked Comey for a vow of loyalty during a private meeting at the White House, which Comey believed was taped. The president tweeted, "Comey better hope that there are no tapes."
I didn't tape, and I don't have any tape, and I didn't tape. But when he found out that that there may be tapes out there, whether it's governmental tapes or anything else, and who knows, I think his story may have changed. I mean, you'll have to take a look at that, because then he has to tell what actually took place at the events.
Whether Russia interfered in last year's U.S. presidential election and whether there was any collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia are the subjects of several investigations underway. A series of close encounters this month over the Baltic Sea and the U.S. shooting down a Syrian aircraft made by Russia have triggered concerns among defense analysts that any direct incident between Russia and the United States, even if accidental, could quickly spiral out of control. White House spokesman Sean Spicer.
We continue to have deconfliction with them in Syria. I think that's a positive thing. I think we enjoy normal diplomatic relations with them. And as the president has said numerous times, that if we can find areas of agreement with Russia, especially with respect to the fight against ISIS, safe zones in Syria, then we'll do it. But it's got to be on terms that are in the best interest, in our national interests.
President Trump spokesman Sean Spicer. Several residential high-rise buildings in London are being evacuated because of fire safety concerns following a huge blaze at an apartment building that killed at least 79 people last week. This woman is a resident of one of the evacuated buildings.
"We've had fire brigade here all day, Camden Council, police. I had a fire safety check done today. Why have they left it till 8:30 at night to start getting residents out? Where do they think we're all going?"
The London Borough of Camden said it's providing hotel rooms for residents of 800 apartments in high-rise buildings in the area known as Swiss Cottage after fire authorities said they'll be unsafe in case of fire. The building that burned last week and those evacuated Friday are all part of government buildings. I'm G. Abby Lee in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
Policemen raided the office and they arrested three of our youth leaders, and up now we don't know where they have taken them and we don't know the reasons for them arresting them.
The Ugandan police raid the offices of the main opposition party, the Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC.
Sir Ketamele Masiri was a chief architect of our democratic development, both as vice president and minister of finance planning, as well as during the period of his presidency.
Flags in Botswana fly at half-mast as the country mourns former President Ketamele Masiri.
The Democratic Party of Rwanda is now preparing for the campaign. I mean, we are waiting for the announcement, first of all, the official announcement from the Commission, which will be next week.
And Rwandans go to the polls on August 4 to choose a president. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Police have twice raided the offices of the Ugandan Main Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, in the capital Kampala Saturday. Some youths were arrested, but the police have yet to charge them with any crimes. Local media reports the police are saying they launched an investigation after unidentified people dropped pigs across the city. Police also say they got a tip-off that the suspects were painting pigs to be dropped later at different parts of the city. But the opposition FDC says this is yet another attempt by the government to intimidate and harass opponents. For reaction to the police raids, I reached Wafula Ogutu, a prominent member of the FDC.
Policemen raided the office and they arrested the three of our youth leaders. And up now, we don't know where they have taken them. And we don't know the reasons for them arresting them. But we understand that they suspect the youth were discussing the issue of the President Museveni planning to lift the constitutional age limit on his presidency, an issue he doesn't want to discuss by the country at all. 2 weeks ago, some of the youth were arrested. They had tried to organize students and lecturers of Makerere University. They had tried to organize a seminar to discuss the same matter, and the police went and the barracks outside the hall where they're supposed to be and went with many vehicles. About 40 police officers went there and they just saw everybody. So that's what we think is the reason.
I understand the men were arrested because they were painting pigs to be dropped later at different parts of the city, which the police consider as a crime.
No, there were no pigs that were in our refugee office. That's not true at all. Even the boys are suspected. Yes, one of them had earlier been associated with a group which had pigs thrown at Parliament, but there were no pigs in the FDC office, and FDC has not been involved in those pigs, painting pigs and throwing them to demonize or to show that our political leadership is like pigs.
The police spokesperson in Kampala, Emilian Kayima, says police opened a general inquiry file after unidentified people dropped pigs near State House, Nakasero and Sheraton Kampala Hotel, and their investigations are what informed their operation. What do you say to that?
I think they are getting targeting FDC and FDC office because FDC is the remaining voice against Museveni's dictatorship and life freedom. And so they would easily go and go for them. But when they went there, they found these young people just in office. They were having their own meetings. They had nothing to do with pigs or painting pigs. No, that's not true. The police is saying it's not true.
Supporters of the National Resistance Movement, the ruling party, are saying that this is yet another indication that the opposition FDC and its allies will use any means necessary, including illegal actions of protest, violence, and use of pigs to undermine President Museveni's government.
There's something true and something wrong there. yes, we would want to undermine Museveni's government because we don't consider it a legitimate government. It is an illegitimate government. We know that President Museveni was defeated by Dr. Kizza Besigye, and he went on to carry out a coup on the day when they announced the elections, and he arrested Dr. Besigye for 40 days, kept him in jail, still after he had sworn in, then he released him. We don't recognize him as the president of Uganda, and if we could bring him down, yes. But we don't do that through legal means and the constitutional means. We should use all legal means to undermine his government and weaken it so that it can either negotiate itself out of power or organize elections which are reasonable to everybody. But we are not going to use violence. That's our policy, and we are not going to use pigs. It doesn't make sense using pigs or using violence. What we need is we shall use constitutional means, legal means, and we are using that.
Wafula Ogutu is a prominent member of the Ugandan Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC. He spoke with me from Kampala. Flags are flying at half-mast as Botswana mourns its second president after independence. Sir Ketumele Masiri, who was 91, died Thursday after a short illness. Masiri was Botswana's first vice president after independence in 1966, before replacing President Seretse Khama in 1980. He served as president for 18 years until he stepped down voluntarily in 1998. He was succeeded by Festus Mohai, who had been his vice president. An official tribute from the Botswana government, I reached Information Minister Jeff Ramsey.
Sir Ketumele Masiri was a chief architect of our democratic development, both as vice president and minister of finance planning, as well as during the period of his presidency. So we are honoring him. We are in a formal state of mourning right now. Our flags are at half mast. His body will be lying in state from Tuesday. There'll be a big memorial service here in Habaroni, the capital, on Wednesday, and his funeral will be held next Thursday in his home village of Kanye.
It will be a state funeral, obviously.
Yes, it is. And we've also opened up condolence books in our missions abroad, including our missions in Washington and New York, as well as in all of our district and sub-district headquarters and here at the Parliament building in Habaroni.
What did Ket Masiri mean to the people of Botswana?
Almost everything. You know, for the past five decades, he's been a towering figure here, even in his retirement. He has been a sage. But the thing about Masiri is we could go on about all of his enormous accomplishments in helping to set Botswana on the path of development it did. When he was Minister of Finance, Development Planning, Vice President, and then President, that is from 1966 to 1998, Botswana enjoyed the highest economic growth rate in the world. But at the same time, there was this massive expansion of human development and education, health, social welfare. And all of that he presided over in the management framework that he set in the early days of independence, the budgeting process, the five-year planning, and the likes, the courting of donors, et cetera, in the early years, the management of the mineral wealth in the subsequent years was transformational. And yet at the same time, he was a very humble person, a very accessible person. Of course, we're a small country, but he was somebody that people knew from all walks of life, and he continued to interact with people right up to last week when he was stricken. Indeed, he was planning a whole lot of special activities this week through his Sir Ketumele Masiri Foundation, public forums and the likes. So he was just a giant of a person, except at the same time. Yes.
Jeff, I wanted to ask, what caused his demise?
Well, I don't know exactly. He was stricken sometime last Friday, if not late Thursday. But he was hospitalized on Friday. He was 91. He would have been 92 next month. And so I can't really say what the particular medical condition was, but it was natural, for sure.
Talking about his democratic credentials in Botswana and beyond, he led quite a number of institutions to be a poll observer in a number of African countries. Can you elaborate on what he stood for as flying the flag of Botswana?
Well, yes. I mean, going back to the earlier days, of course, he was a very active member of the frontline states and played a very quiet but effective role in promoting democracy and the vis-a-vis the last vestiges of colonialism and apartheid. But in the subsequent years, he did set a benchmark, I think, for the region and other developing countries in the world in terms of democratic development, both as president, of course, in the way he left the presidency, stepping down, the constitutional reforms he put in place in the last 5 years of his presidency. And then, yes, as an elder statesman, he was working with groups like the Mu Ibrahim Foundation, with his own Sir Kitamili Masiri Foundation, in promoting democracy. As you say, managing elections, he, of course, presided over the panel on the Rwanda genocide and many other things, but also serving as a mediator. Most recently, he's been trying to mediate peace between the Renamo opposition and the government in Mozambique. And so he's been active in that, you know. So right up to the time of his death, he never stopped. He was very active in mind and body right to the end.
What would be the government message to the people of Botswana as they mourn former President Kek Masiri?
Well, we have asked them to mourn. We have said that while public engagements can go forward, they should be carried out in a manner appropriate for this occasion of mourning. And we trust our people to know what we mean, because basically funerals and mourning are something that's very much part of our culture here. So, and at any rate, the nation is already mourning. The news went like wildfire overnight. On the social media, tributes are pouring through, as well as more traditional mediums. People are signing the condolence books. So in a way, I guess what I'm really saying is the nation doesn't really have to be guided by its government. It's coming out and mourning their great fallen hero.
Jeff Ramsey is the information minister for Botswana. He spoke with me from the capital, Habaroni. Rwandans go to the polls to choose a president on August 4. Incumbent President Paul Kagame faces challenge from 35-year-old independent candidate Diane Shima Rigara and Frank Habineza from the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda. This after 9 opposition political parties out of the 11 registered groups decided to back Kagame's re-election bid. On Thursday, the Electoral Commission ended receiving documentation from the candidate for the poll, but gave up to Friday to allow the candidate to present additional documentation if required. For the latest development about the opposition party's plans ahead of the elections, I reached Frank Habineza from the Democratic Green Party in the Rwandan capital, Kigali.
The Democratic Party of Rwanda is now preparing for the campaign. I mean, we are waiting for the announcement, first of all, the official announcement from the Electoral Commission, which will be next week on Tuesday, that's the 27th of June. After which, after they announce the provisional list of candidates, then we went to overdrive preparation for the campaign, because the campaign will start on the 14th of July. As you know, as candidates, we are not allowed to fundraise before we are being confirmed as candidates. So we start fundraising official candidates when they are confirmed as I think starting from next week, yeah. So we'll inquire from the commission if that will be okay. But as a party, we're also working on our manifesto, which we will announce officially on the 14th of July, on the day of the commencement of the presidential campaign.
Realistically, what do you think your chances are to challenge incumbent President Paul Kagame?
Well, now we have 15% chances of winning this election, because we have many Rwandans who do not want to change the constitution so that President Kagame continues. But these Rwandans do not have the chance to vote properly, because we were never allowed the chance to make our campaign for the no change of the constitution. That time when they were changing the constitution, it was then hired to them, and they refused us to do a no change campaign. So we know that now we have enough time to convince those people to vote for us and to vote for change. And then we know that also there's 1.5 million new voters who never voted during the referendum period in 2015 who are going to vote, and most of them are youth, and most of them are our members. And also another chance is that we are the only political party which is going to challenge the ruling party.
Critics are saying that your party is not seen as a threat to President Paul Kagame, and that is why you are allowed as an opposition party to operate in the country. What is your response to that?
We have a constituency, a very big constituency as a political party. We have followers, both inside the country and in the diaspora. And as I said, we also have new voters, 1.5 million new voters who are going to vote in this election. So we have a very big chance of winning this election. So we are very confident that as a opposition party, giving our views to the people, talking about changing different things, I mean, there are so many policies that we have affected, that have been changed. So we know that people in Rwanda, they know us, they believe in us, we have been with them, we are with them, we are not in exile, I mean, we are in exile before we came back. People know us, we share their problems, we share their sorrow and their happiness. So we are here for the people, and the people, they will vote for us.
There's a young lady who is an independent presidential candidate. She presented her documentation to the Electoral Commission. Are you in talks with her to join forces, somewhat of a formidable team, to challenge President Paul Kagame?
We have had talks before with this young lady several times before she announced her candidature. So we have we could continue those talks if necessary in the near future.
Some Rwandans that I spoke with are telling me that if President Paul Kagame, for years, been getting over 80 to 90% of the total vote count, what makes you think that you could pose any challenge, because he's so popular in the country, whether coerced or not, as his critics say?
We think that those figures are not you cannot rely on them, because the previous election, there was no serious challenge at all. The previous candidates, like in 2010, they were all from the coalition partners from the government. Some were former ministers or ministers. And so we had no challenge at all. But if the election is free and fair and there is a competition, we believe that we cannot get that 90%.
Frank Habineza is the main opposition leader from the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda. He spoke with me from Kigali. A Kenyan court has ruled that presidential election results announced at the polling station level are final. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports, some analysts say the ruling will reduce the electoral irregularities that have plagued past Kenyan elections.
After reading his judgment for more than 3 hours, the five-judge appellate court ruled that the election results announced at the constituency level were final, dismissing a complaint by the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. William Ouko is one of the judges at the Court of Appeal.
The lowest voting unit and the first level of declaration of presidential election results is the polling station. The declaration form containing those results is a primary document, and all other forms subsequent to it are only tallies of the original and final results recorded at the polling station.
In April, the Kenyan High Court made a similar ruling, but the Electoral Commission asked the Appeals Court to overrule the judgment. In its argument, the Electoral Commission questioned the integrity of its officers in charge of polling station returns. Judge Ouko dismissed that argument, calling hypocritical for the Commission to doubt its workers. Kenya's last two presidential elections were marred by disputes over the outcome. The 2007 dispute triggered intercommunal fighting that killed more than 1,000 people and displaced hundreds of thousands more from their homes. Felix Odhiambo, Kenya Country Director of the Non-Profit Electoral Law and Governance Institute in Africa, says Friday's ruling discouraged tampering with the election result.
It will cure the mischief that have been identified in the past, where the Electoral Commission unilaterally alters and changes the election results at the National Tallying Center. And most fundamentally, it gives credence to the finality and sanctity of the vote.
Ouko called on the Electoral Commission to hold a credible election in line with the country's constitution.
The responsibility of the appellant to deliver a credible and acceptable election in accordance with the constitution is so grave and so awesome, and must approach and execute it with absolute fitly, probity and integrity.
Kenya is scheduled to hold a general election on August 8th. President Uhuru Kenyatta is running for a second term against challengers, who include former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
When a person suffers from a life-limiting illness and there are no options available to cure the disease, the next step might be to help the patient manage the physical pain and emotional challenges of the dying process. This is called palliative care. However, in Africa, the resources for effective palliative care can be sadly lacking. The African Palliative Care Association has published an atlas that shows where the resources are and where they are needed. To find out more, viewers Adam Phillips spoke with John Ree, a fourth-year medical student at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York.
In Africa, oftentimes due to the lack of resources, when we talk about palliative care, we're often talking about towards the very end of life, where patients usually present to hospices with very advanced stage cancers, whereas in the U.S., palliative care is now being integrated earlier on in the stage of illness.
You say there's limited resources. I mean, is there a shortage of pain management medicine in Africa?
It's not just that there's a lack of pain medications, such as morphine, which is the most often used medicine for pain management. But oftentimes there are legal barriers to access to pain medicines as well. There's this fear of using opioids due to opioid addiction in Africa, even though the reality is that when used correctly at the end of life, especially for cancer pain, it's very relevant to use morphine. Another barrier is that because of the lack of healthcare workers in general, there's a lack of prescribers who can prescribe morphine. There were certain countries where there weren't even any medical schools. Some countries, such as Uganda, have been very innovative. Uganda is the first country to have allowed for a nurse prescriber privilege. And so nurses who are specifically trained in palliative care in Uganda can actually prescribe morphine for patients, because the reality is that there are not enough doctors to be able to provide that.
I would imagine that there would be more people per capita in Africa who need advanced palliative care only because there are fewer people who are going to be in remission or cured of cancer and other serious diseases due to lack of resources relative to the West.
Yeah, that's a really great point. In a way, palliative care is even more necessary in Africa due to the fact that most people are presenting very late in their stages of disease. And so in the case where treatments are very limited and very expensive, and oftentimes patients can't afford them, arguably palliative care becomes even more important so that patients can at least die with minimal pain, with being supported by their families, etc.
What about the culture of hospice and palliative care? It was a bit of a hard sell here in the United States for a while. I mean, do people talk more freely or easily about end-of-life issues and death over in Africa, generally speaking?
As in all cultures, I think death is something that tends to be somewhat stigmatized. It tends to be something that's feared. But I would say as a whole, if I were to make a generalization, especially speaking from my experiences in Uganda, the focus on spirituality is much greater. The idea of there being an afterlife is much more prevalent in the everyday life of Africans. And so in that way, I think that especially in terms of spiritual counseling, which is an essential aspect of palliative care, it was done on every visit. I do think that in a cultural sense, there is a lot to learn in terms of how to be with a patient, how to make a patient feel like they are being cared for by their family and supported. And I do think that those are things that are really important to learn from that context. But the reality is that there are very few hospice services available, right? And so there are still many people who are dying in hospitals, who are going into the hospital at end of life. And so because of the fact that once you're enrolled in a hospice program, they do everything that they can to make sure that you die comfortably at home. But because hospices aren't in general available, most people are still dying either in a lot of pain, without symptoms controlled, without curative or symptomatic treatment available. And so there's still a lot to be done on the continent.
John Ree is a fourth-year medical student at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Fire, 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 fire wasiwasi ni wakina kwako sina. Nyota njema ifajiri chana uzima. Wana kesha kulitabiri pendo kuchina baby. Tena wengine wakubwa mili watu wazima. Tanga kunani burugu mechi mkwa kwani. Mtoto tari wakandana. Samba chumbani yendo mesi uwanjani. Sini pie simba ya la. Mbuma kama tsunami. Jinsi kuna tetem. Sura zari na sani. Shepu sepetu em. I say you're fire baby you.
Fire 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 baby.
Fire oh oh.
Fire 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 baby.
Akicheka sura kito.
Fire 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 fire.
Akini gusa kabisa no moto.
Fire 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 fire.
Let me tell you something about this bubble.
Fire, fire.
Love I get for him because so rubble.
Fire, fire.
Come and see the way they love, they make me to gyrate.
Fire, fire.
Swear not only him go fit, enjoy my figure. The way you shock my brain, I cannot explain.
Fall for you with no shame.
Baby, for life's a lie.
Fire, baby,
fire, fire, fire,
fire,
baby.
Fire, fire,
fire, fire, fire, baby.
Your love is sweet.
Fire, 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 baby.
Down, down.
Hey, see la vida loca. Vuela lo hombre.
of the matter. Then go beat me for Twitter. Then go cuss to my mother. Then go cuss to my father. They call me womanizer. Say the boy is a rasta. But the boy is a winner. I'm on top of the ladder.
Duro. I'll buy you anything, so make you wine eh.
Omo de mi small small mi.
Omo wa kin taste ye.
Omo de mi small small mi.
Jo fe kin date ye.
Omo de mi small small mi.
O ni regret ye.
Omo de mi small small mi.
Oh baby.
Omo small small mi. Suma suma mi.
Ma fi mi sile.
Suma suma mi. Suma suma mi.
E ju di si mi.
Suma suma mi. Suma suma mi.
Oh baby.
Suma suma mi. Suma suma mi.
I come to celebrate. Near my corner oh. Join me jubilate everything. Oh ah oh. Sugar pumping. Finger licking. Honey burning. Loving dubbing. Today. I'll buy you anything, so make you duro. Oh, push a wine,
yeah.
Taste,
yeah.
Get,
yeah.
Only regret,
yeah.
I want girls in your mellow, mellow. I want boys in your mellow, mellow. Hey. Oh, me le file, jeko maro. I'ma get go down, jeko maro. Ileke ma jasi, ileke ma jasi. Ipi kolo ma jasi, baby get go and some. Yeah, go, go logo, baby one rogo. Fine like Beyonce, on the boys see one rogo. Caro, yellow CC. Caro chop my money, follow Ibo. Oh, Ibo run away, Caro they cry. I will be okay, I will be alright.
Oh, baby.
Suma suma mi. Suma suma mi.
Ma fi mi sile.
Suma suma mi. Suma suma mi.
E ju di si mi.
Suma suma mi. Suma suma mi.
Oh, baby.
Suma suma mi. Suma suma mi.
Me today. We go party. Quesidea, lossy money,
Bado.
My lord duro. I'll buy you anything, so make you duro. Oh, boy, she wine,
yeah. Oh, my baby, suma, suma, me.
Oh, my working taste, yeah.
Oh, my baby, suma, suma, me.
Show fecking get, yeah.
Oh, my baby, suma, suma, me.
Only regret, yeah.
Oh, my baby, suma, suma, me.
You are my special queen. I will love you till the end.
Zagada. It's your boy Easy.
Zagada.
Yeah.
Jules.
It's your boy Star.
Bootsy, mommy volume.
Boy, when it comes to your touch, don't be scared to get too rough. Don't take it easy, baby. Don't take it easy, babe. I know what I can take. I know what I can take. I wanna let it right now. Don't care where we at right now. Easy got my body like skin tight. If you're there by my side, then times when I know I get sicker. If you're by my side, you drive me crazy. I'm your lady. You be the only.
My baby, you be the only one for me. Only one for me, you be the only one that I need. Sick of when I know be cheap, you know they run away, you stay with me.
Get up, get up, get up, get up, let's make love tonight. When you see me and I see you, baby girl, say my head they touch tonight. Oh, get up, get up, get up, get up, come touch me tonight. When you see me and I see you, baby girl, say I need your love tonight. Say I don't need your love all night. Say you got me all night. Say never leave me all night. Say you got me all night.
And I go be your body like skin tight. Where I could be by your side. 10 times when I know get to see God. You been there by my side.
Baby girl, I do your body like skin tight. So you go there by my side. Till the end of time, we go there tight. Say you go there with
me.
I'll never let you
go. My baby.
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaites, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, on a dead tree, there are no monkeys. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has recently been made aware of new reports of the Congolese government and militias engaging in horrific human rights violations and abuses in the Kasai regions of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC. The latest report accuses the Congolese military of summary executions of women and children and mass rape. and militias of sexual and gender-based violence, burning villages, and mutilating and killing civilians, including children. Reports also indicate some state agents are involved in arming and directing militia. The surge in violence in the Kasai regions is symptomatic of underlying trends across the DRC. In its report on human rights practices in 2016, the U.S. State Department identified unlawful killings, torture, and other cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment and punishment, and sexual and gender-based violence, including rapes and abductions, as the principal human rights abuses in the DRC. Other major human rights problems in the DRC included disappearances, life-threatening conditions in prisons and detention facilities, arbitrary arrests and prolonged pretrial detention, arbitrary interference with privacy, family and home, abuse of internally displaced persons, arbitrary arrests and prolonged detention, harassment of civil society and opposition leaders, and the inability of citizens to change their government, corruption at all levels of government, and restrictions on freedom of speech and press. As U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley articulated, these allegations in the Kasai regions of the DRC must be investigated, and those responsible must be held accountable.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.